All right, you can see my age too. Let me start by thanking and congratulating Hugh and Tim for putting this session together. And by being openly honest, there was this slide that we were supposed to have, no conflicting, well, since I don't make any money anyway, there's nothing conflicting. But also, it's being openly and open and honest. I am an advocate from within public health that public health must join hands with the correctional health system if we are going to make any difference in health disparities. So I was very happy when Dr. Akers asked me to be a part of the panel, and I scratched my chin, as I sometimes do, asking myself, well, what would I like to speak about? There are so many things to speak about when it comes to corrections in public health. And I thought for a moment about the way I usually talk about corrections, and I talk about how people, when they go into the correctional health system, they're only there for 2.5 years, and they come back out into the community. So don't think that they're gone. And then as I thought more, I realized we never talk about recidivism. Those people who are gone for 2.5 years, we don't talk about what happens to them afterwards. So I thought I would try to dig up a little information on recidivism, and it was a bit of a frustrating effort. One, the first problem is the definition. What is recidivism? One return to incarceration, multiple returns to incarceration. If you look at the Bureau of Justice Statistics, you see you can find at least two definitions. One is recidivism is rearrest, reconviction, re-sentence to prison, and return to prison with or without a new sentence. That's a definition. We're not sure what the and means. Does that mean each of those could be recidivism, or does it have to be all? Another BUJS definition is that recidivism refers to both the type of stopping event, such as an arrest, and the amount of time between the starting and stopping criminal justice events, such as between entering a program and rearrest. Now, first you have to sit and scratch your head and figure what are they saying, and then realize that you've seen two different definitions in one source. The Washington State Policy Group has a definition that recidivism is a conviction for an offense committed after placement in the community. So anytime you've been in a community and you've committed an offense, that's recidivism. So when people have tried to look at epidemiology, at the measures of recidivism, they've usually used 3 years, but they've used many of those different boundaries that I've mentioned. So one of the things that public health is going to have to do, if we're going to be serious about correctional health, is decide what is the definition of recidivism for ourselves so that we can undertake studies and do some studies that we can make sense out of. But the studies of recidivism are few and far between. The biggest one was in 1994, with about 300,000 prisoners. And you see here, there are many interesting... Here you go. I've got one. This is recidivism. This is the point of that the person is released from corrections. And this is 3 years later. You see that 68% of these people were rearrested within 3 years. And you see reconviction, return to prison, those are lower numbers, But all in all, if you look at all of the returns to prison, both for a new sentence and for just violating bail and that sort of thing, over 50% of people who are released from prison here are back in prison here. And from a public health point of view, we have to look at the curve. Look at that rearrest curve. In the 6 months after release, 30% of the people that we're talking about have been rearrested. So we see that if we're going to have public health strategies to deal with recidivism, we need to be very conscious of who's coming out, and we need to be very much aware of what our interventions should be for these populations. Now, this is a very busy slide, but I wanted you to see these numbers, but I wanted to point out some of the ones that are really, well, not surprising, but real. Men are more likely than women to be returned to prison, with or without a new sentence. African Americans are more likely than whites to be returned to prison, with or without a new sentence. In these data, Hispanics were lower, but this is, don't remember how old these data are. So we wonder whether those figures have changed, and maybe some of the experts here can tell us. But the younger a person is when he or she is released, the more likely he or she is to return to prison. Now look at this 14 to 17 year group. Although the numbers are very small, 82% of them are rearrested within 3 years. So when we're thinking about this population, we've got to think about adolescents and shortly after they come out. But look at the next group, the next highest group is 18 to 24, and 75% of them are rearrested within 3 years. The number, and prison is almost like a career. The more times you're arrested, the more likely you are to be arrested. Prisoners who with just one prior arrest have a 40% rearrest rate. Those with two priors have a 47.5% rearrest rate, and those with three priors go up to 55% rearrest. So we can see that we need to get to people when they're young and out of prison for the first time if we're going to have an impact on their recidivism. One of the things that I was surprised to find out was that people who commit nonviolent offenses are more likely to go back to prison than those who commit violent offenses. So there's a lot to do. Now, there's a lot to do. I think of it as a lot to do in three different places. There's a lot to do within the criminal justice system. There's a lot that we need to be doing with the person who has just been released in collaboration with the criminal justice system. And there are a lot of things that community public health needs to be doing to prevent recidivism. Substance abuse in-house, in the incarceration, actually prevents or reduces recidivism. Cognitive behavioral therapy, I think, was mentioned also. But even things like getting a GED in corrections reduces recidivism. So we're talking public health, but we can't forget about education and vocational education. Coordinated community activities, halfway houses, intensive case management, they all reduce recidivism. And when we bring our preventive mind to the whole area of recidivism, we have to remember that if we prevent someone from going to jail in the first place, then he or she will never become a recidivist. So preventive programs for high-risk populations are a logical role for public health in reducing recidivism. We at Morgan have just been approached by the state of Maryland to evaluate their mental health courts, because they're trying to implement mental health courts on the same model as drug courts. And the data on drug courts do show that recidivism is reduced by using that kind of an alternative sentencing strategy. And the question is that true for mental health too? And who is in the best place to answer the question? Public health people. Let me just run on, because I don't want to stay up here forever. There's a cycle. It's interesting that the conference is the borders of populations, and you see my light has just gone out. Okay. In the center is the public. And see that yellow arrow going up towards 12 o'clock? Those are the public going into the correctional health system. These arrows are all specific activities that health can take to reduce recidivism among that population. Of course, we should start right here by trying to get them not to go in. But all the way from the night a person is arrested to implementing the mental health courts, to working with the people inside correctional facilities on substance abuse programs, mental health programs, to working with halfway houses, to intensive case management after a person is released. All of those reduce, see this line? That's the population of people who are in the correctional health system. The people who are between the two lines are in correctional health. And you see the population gets smaller and smaller as we get to 12 o'clock. But sadly, there's still an arrow showing that people sometimes never get out. But public health can have a role all the way from start to restart in reducing recidivism. So joining hands with correctional health should be a major public health strategy for the upcoming millennium. And we can't reduce ethnic disparities, we can't eliminate disparities if we don't work with correctional health. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Hernandez. You all see, that's a new concept that we have yet to even understand. The term that Dr. Hernandez has come up with, the epidemiology of recidivism, that's something that we hope to grow as well. On that note, we're both privileged and honored to have Dr. Cheryl Easley, the new president-elect into the American Public Health Association, who will stand for the president-elect. And we're really honored, and we found out last night a lot of commonality that we were raised in the same area, family. So we have a lot of history, hopefully. And on that, Dr. Easley.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry I'm late. I found out that I was double booked for another session that I actually was responsible for, so I had to go over there and say hi to them before I could come over. For my day job, I am the Dean of the College of Health and Social Welfare at the University of Alaska, Anchorage. And so I'm going to talk to you today as a dean of a multidisciplinary college. I'm not an epidemiologist. I'm not a criminologist. But I do have elements of those disciplines in my college. And when I was asked to be a part of the new virtual center for epidemiological criminology, I was quite impressed and was certainly honored to be asked. Because it brought together some things that I had been thinking were important for a long time. Let me tell you a little bit about my college. We have schools of nursing, social work, programs in public health, human services. We have a physician's assistant program. We have gerontology, civic engagement. We have Center for Human Development, which provides training for people who deliver direct services to people with disabilities. We have the Institute for Circumpolar Health Studies, which is a community, you know, public health type research unit. We have one of three national resource centers for Native elders in the country that is federally funded. And finally, we have a justice center that does both teaching and research. When I first came to the college, people said to me, people said all the other colleges in the university were formed, education, business, whatever. And then everything that was left, they dumped into the College of Health and Social Welfare. And I think that many people, when they looked at the college, thought that the Justice Center was the part that really didn't fit. I always knew it did because I'm a public health nurse, and it made sense to me to have all of those units together. So when I think about what this new discipline means to all of us as epidemiologists, public health type people, or as criminologists, it is a window, an opportunity to bridge some very important disciplines that have to do, that have concern for the welfare of our communities and the health of our communities. We take different approaches, but we're all interested in the same thing. Yes, I do.
Let's find them here.
Okay, thanks. I'm sorry.
I need your mouse.
Okay, I'll let you take that.